Chapter 46. Working Leather. Andral carefully took the oval piece of leather from the steaming water. It had darkened and curled. He moved quickly, picking it up in calloused fingers. The leather was springy and flexible now. He quickly sat down at his bench, a square of sunlight coming in through the window on his right side. He wrapped the leather around a thick wooden rod about 2 inches across, then poked holes around the edges. From there, he began stitching the leather to another piece he'd prepared earlier. A good stitching around the outside would keep it from fraying. A lot of leather workers were casual about stitching. Not Andral. The stitching was what people saw first. It stood out, like paint on a wall. As he worked, the leather dried and lost some of its springiness, but it was still flexible enough. He made the stitches neat and even. He pulled the last few tight and used them to tie the leather around the wooden rod. He'd cut those last once the leather dried. Stitching done, he added some ornaments. A name across the top, pounded into place using his small mallet and leather-topped pins. The symbols of the sword and dragon came next. He'd made those plates himself, based on the pins the Ashaman wore. At the bottom, using his smaller letter pins, he stamped the words, Defend, Guard, Protect. As the leather continued to dry, he got out his stain and gauze to carefully color the letters and the designs for contrast. There was a tranquility to this kind of work. So much of his life was about destruction these days. He knew that had to be. He'd come to the Black Tower in the first place because he understood what was to come. Still, it was nice to create something. He left his current piece, letting it dry while working on some saddle straps. He measured the straps with the marks on the side of his table, then reached for his shears in the tool pouch that hung from the side of his table. He'd made that himself. He was annoyed to discover that they weren't in their place. "Burn the day word got out that I had good shears in here," he thought. Despite Taim's supposedly strict rules for the Black Tower, there was a distressing amount of chaos. Large infractions were punished with harsh measures, but the little things, like wandering into a man's workshop and borrowing his shears, were ignored, particularly if the borrower was one of the Mahale's favorites. Andral sighed. His belt knife was waiting at Quayar's place for sharpening. "Well," he thought, "Taim does keep telling us to look for excuses to channel." Andral emptied himself of emotion, then seized the source. It had been months since he'd had trouble doing that. At first he'd been able to channel only when he was holding a strap of leather. The Mahale had beaten that out of him. It had not been a pleasant process. Sayadin flooded into him, sweet, powerful, beautiful. He sat for a long moment enjoying it. The taint was gone. What a wonder that was. He closed his eyes and breathed in deeply. What would it be like to draw in as much of the one power as the others could? At times he thirsted for that. He knew he was weak, weakest of the dedicated in the Black Tower. Perhaps so weak he should never have been promoted from soldier. Loghain had gone to the Lord Dragon about it, and made the promotion happen against Taim's express wishes. Andral opened his eyes, then held up the strap and wove a tiny gateway only an inch across. It burst alive in front of him, slicing the strap in two. He smiled, then let it vanish and repeated the process. Some said that Loghain had forced Andral's promotion only as a dig against Taim's authority, but Loghain had said that it was Andral's incredible talent with gateways that had earned him the title of dedicated. Loghain was a hard man, broken around the edges, like an old scabbard that hadn't been properly lacquered. But that scabbard still held a deadly sword. Loghain was honest, a good man, beneath the scuff marks. Andral eventually finished with the straps. He walked over and snipped the string, holding the oval piece of leather in place. It retained its shape, and he held it up to the sunlight, inspecting the stitching. The leather was stiff without being brittle. He fitted onto his forearm. Yes, the molding was good. He nodded to himself. One of the tricks to life was paying attention to the small details. Focus. Make the small things right. If each stitch was secure on the arm guard, then it wouldn't fray or snap. That could mean the difference between an archer lasting through a barrage or having to put away his bow. One archer wouldn't make a battle, but the small things piled up, one atop another, until they became large things. He finished the arm guard by affixing a few permanent ties to its back, so one could bind it in place on the arm. He took his black coat off the back of his chair. The silver sword pin on the high collar glimmered in the window's sunlight as he did up the buttons. He glanced at himself in the glass's reflection, making certain the coat was straight. Small things were important. Seconds were small things, and if you heaped enough of those on top of one another, they became a man's life. He put the arm guard on his arm, then pushed open the door to his small workshop and entered the outskirts of the Black Tower's village. Here, clusters of two-storied buildings were arranged, much like any small town in Andor. Peaked roofs, thatched, with straight wooden walls, some stone and brick as well. A double line of them ran down the center of the village. Looking only at those, one might have thought he was strolling through New Braem or Groffendale. Of course, that required ignoring the men in black coats. They were everywhere, running errands for the Mahale, going to practice, working on the foundations of the Black Tower structure itself. This place was still a work in progress. A group of soldiers, bearing neither the sword pin nor the red and gold dragon, used the power to blast a long trough in the ground beside the road. It had been decided that the village needed a canal. Andril could see the weaves, mostly earth, spinning around the soldiers. In the Black Tower, you did as much with the power as you could. Always training, like men lifting stones to build their strength. Light how Loghain and Taim pushed those lads. Andril moved out onto the newly graveled roadway. Much of that gravel bore melted edges from where it had been blasted. They had brought in boulders, through gateways, on weaves of air, then shattered them with explosive weaves. It had been like a war zone, rocks shattering, spraying chips. With power and training like that, the Ashaman would be able to reduce city walls to rubble. Andril continued on his way. The Black Tower was a place of strange sights, and melted gravel wasn't nearly the strangest of them. Neither were the soldiers tearing up ground following Andril's own careful surveying. Lately, the strangest sight to him was the children. They ran and played, jumping into the trough left behind by the working soldiers, sliding down its earthen sides, then scrambling back up. Children, playing in the holes created by Saiyadeen blasts. The world was changing. Andril's own grandma, so ancient she'd lost every tooth in her mouth, had used stories of men channeling to frighten him into bed on nights when he tried to slip outside and count the stars. The darkness outside hadn't frightened him, nor had stories of Trollocs and Fades. But men who could channel, that had terrified him. Now he found himself here, grown into his middle years, suddenly afraid of the dark, but completely at peace with men who could channel. He walked down the road, gravel crunching beneath his boots. The children came scrambling up out of the ditch and flocked around him. He idly brought out a handful of candies, purchased on the last scouting mission. "Two each," he said sternly as dirty hands reached for the candies. "And no shoving, mind you." Hands went to mouths, and the children gave him bobbed heads in thanks, calling him Master Genhold, before racing away. They didn't go back to the trench, but invented a new game, running off toward the fields to the east. Andril brushed off his hands, smiling. Children were so adaptable. Before them, centuries of tradition, terror, and superstition could melt away like butter left too long in the sun. But it was good that they'd chosen to leave the trench. The one power could be unpredictable. No, that wasn't right. Saiyadeen was very predictable. The men who wielded it, however, well, they were a different story. The soldiers halted their work and turned to meet him. He wasn't a full Ashaman and didn't merit a salute, but they showed him respect. Too much. He wasn't sure why they deferred to him. He was no great man, particularly not here in the Black Tower. Still, they nodded to him as he passed. Most of these were the men who had been recruited from the Two Rivers. Sturdy lads and men, eager, though many were on the young side. Half of them didn't need to shave but once a week. Andral walked up to them, then inspected their work, eyeing the line of string he'd tied to small stakes. He nodded in approval.
"Angle is good, lads," he said. "But keep the sides steeper if you can."
"Yes, Master Genhold," said the one leading the team.
J.M. Torfin was his name, a spindly young man with dusty brown hair. He still held the power. That raging river of strength was so enticing. Rare was the man who could release it without a sense of loss. The Mihail encouraged them to keep hold of it, said that holding it taught them to control it. But Andral had known seductive sensations somewhat like Sayadin before. The exhilaration of battle, the intoxication of rare drinks from the Isles of the Seafolk, the heady feeling of victory. A man could be swept up in those feelings and lose control of himself, forgetting who he was. And Sayadin was more seductive than anything else he'd experienced. He said nothing to Taim about his reservations. He had no business lecturing the Mihail.
"Here," Andral said, "let me show you what I mean by straight."
He took a deep breath, then emptied himself of feeling. He used the old soldier's trick to do that. He'd been taught it by his first instructor in the sword, old one-armed Garfin, whose heavy rural Ilioner accent had been virtually incomprehensible. Of course, Andral himself had a faint Terrabonner accent, he was told. It had faded over the years since he'd last been home. Within the nothing, the void, Andral could feel the raging force that was Sayadin. He grabbed it as a man grabbed the neck of a horse running wild, hoping to steer it some small way, but mostly just trying to hold on. Sayadin was wonderful. Yes, it was more powerful than any intoxicant. It made the world more beautiful, more lush. Holding that terrible power, Andral felt as if he'd come to life, leaving the dry husk of his former self behind. It threatened to carry him away in its swift currents. He worked quickly, weaving a tiny trickle of earth, the best he could manage, for earth was where he was weakest, and carefully shaved the sides of the canal.
"If you leave too much jutting out," he explained as he worked, "then the canal flow will stay muddy as it washes away the earth on the sides. The straighter and more firm the sides, the better. You see?"
The soldiers nodded. Sweat had beaded on their brows, flakes of dirt sticking to their foreheads and cheeks. But their black coats were clean, particularly the sleeves. You could judge a man's respect for his uniform by whether or not he used the sleeve to wipe his brow on a day like this. The Two Rivers lads used handkerchiefs. The more senior Ashaman, of course, rarely sweated at all. It would take these lads more practice to get that down while concentrating so much.
"Good men," Andral said, standing up and glancing over them.
Andral laid a hand on James' shoulder.
"You lads are doing a fine job here. The Two Rivers. It grows men right."
The lads beamed. It was good to have them, particularly compared to the quality of men Taim had been recruiting lately. The Mihail's scouts claimed they took whoever they could find. Yet why was it that most they brought back had such angry, unsettling dispositions?
"Master Genhold?" asked one of the soldiers.
"Yes, Trost?"
Andral asked.
Have you heard anything of Master Loghain?"
The others looked hopeful. Andral shook his head.
"He hasn't returned from his scouting mission. I'm sure he'll be back soon."
The lads nodded, though he could see that they were beginning to worry. They had a right to. Andral had been worrying for weeks now, ever since Loghain had left in the night. Where had he gone? Why had he taken Donalo, Mezar, and Wellen, three of the most powerful dedicated loyal to him, along?
And now there were those Aes Sedai camped outside, supposedly sent with authority from the dragon to bond Ashaman. Taim had given one of his half-smiles at that, the kind that never reached his eyes, and told them the group from the White Tower had first pick, since they'd come first. The others waited impatiently.
"The Mahail," one of the Two Rivers men said, expression growing dark. "He—"
"Keep your heads on your shoulders," Andral interrupted, "and don't make waves. Not yet. We wait for Loghain."
The men sighed, but nodded. Distracted by the conversation, Andral almost didn't notice when the shadows nearby began creeping toward him. Shadows of men, lengthening in the sunlight. Shadows within the trough. Shadows of rocks and clefts in the earth. Slowly, deviously, they turned toward Andral. Andral steeled himself but couldn't dispel the panic. This one terror he could feel despite the void. They came whenever he held Saiyadin for too long. He released it immediately, and the shadows reluctantly crept back to their places. The Two Rivers lads watched him, discomfort in their faces. Could they see the wild cast to Andral's eyes?
Nobody spoke of the irregularities that afflicted men of the Black Tower. It just wasn't done. Like whispering dirty family secrets. The taint was cleansed. These lads would never have to feel the things that Andral did. Eventually he and the others, who had been in the tower before the cleansing, would become rarities. Light, but he couldn't understand why anyone in the tower would listen to him. Weak in the power and insane to boot. And the worst part was, he knew, deeply down to his very center, that those shadows were real. Not just some madness concocted by his mind. They were real, and they would destroy him if they reached him. They were real. They had to be.
Oh, Light, he thought, gritting his teeth. Either option is terrifying. Either I'm insane or the darkness itself wants to destroy me.
That was why he could no longer sleep at nights without huddling in fear. Sometimes he could go hours holding the source without seeing the shadows. Sometimes only minutes. He took a deep breath.
All right, he said, satisfied that his voice, at least, sounded in control. You best get back to work. Keep that slope moving the right direction, mind you. We'll have a mess and a half to deal with if the water overflows and floods this area.
As they obeyed, Andral left them, cutting back through the village. Near the center stood the barracks, 5 large, thick-stoned buildings for the soldiers, 12 smaller buildings for the dedicated. Right now, this little village was the Black Tower. That would change. A tower proper was being built nearby, the foundation already dug. He could visualize what the place might someday look like. He'd once worked with a master architect, one of 12 different apprenticeships he'd held in a life that sometimes seemed to have lasted too long. Yes, he could see it in his mind's eye. A domineering black stone tower, power-built. Strong, sturdy. At its base would be blockish square structures with crenellated tops. This village would grow to become a town, then a large city as vast as Tarvalen. The streets had been built to allow the passing of several wagons at a time. New sections were surveyed and laid. It bespoke vision and planning. The streets themselves whispered of the Black Tower's destiny. Andral followed a worn pathway through the scrub grass. Distant booms and snaps echoed across the plains, like the sounds of a whip being cracked. Each man had his own reasons for coming. Revenge, curiosity, desperation, lust for power. Which was Andral's reason? All 4, perhaps? He left the village and eventually rounded a line of trees and came to the practice range, a small canyon between 2 hills. A line of men stood channeling fire and earth. The hills needed to be leveled to make land for farming, an opportunity to practice. These men were mostly dedicated. Weaves spun in the air, much more skillful and powerful than those the Two Rivers lads had used. These were streamlined, like hissing vipers or striking arrows. Rocks exploded and bursts of dirt sprayed into the air. The blasting was done in an unpredictable pattern to confuse and disorient foes. Andril could imagine a group of cavalry thundering down that slope, only to be surprised by exploding earth. A single dedicated could wipe out dozens of riders in moments. Andril noted with dissatisfaction that the working men stood in two groups. The tower was beginning to split and divide. Those loyal to Loghain shunned and ostracized. On the right, Canler, Imaran, and Nalam worked with focus and dedication, joined by Jonath Dowtry, the most skilled soldier among the Two Rivers lads. On the left, a group of Taim's cronies were laughing among themselves. Their weebs were more wild, but also more destructive. Kotaran lounged at the back, leaning against a leafy hardgum tree and overseeing the work. The workers took a break and called for a village boy to bring water. Andral walked up, and Arlan Nalam saw him first, waving with a broad smile. The Damani man wore a thin mustache. He was just shy of his 30th year, though he sometimes acted much younger. Andral was still smarting from the time Nalam had put tree sap in his boots.
"Andral," Nalam called, "come tell these uncultured louts what a Ratashan dazer is."
"A Ratashan dazer?" Andral said. "It's a drink. Mix of mead and ewe's milk.
Foul stuff."
Nalam looked at the others proudly. He had no pins on his coat. He was only a soldier. But he should have been advanced by now.
"You're bragging about your travels again, Nalam?"
Andral asked, unlacing the leather arm guard.
"We Damani get around," Nalam said. "You know, the kind of work my father does, spying for the crown."
"Last week you said your father was a merchant," Canler said.
The sturdy man was the oldest of the group, his hair graying, his square face worn from many years in the sun.
"He is," Nalam said. "That's his front for being a spy."
"Aren't women the merchants in Arad-Doman?" Jonath asked, rubbing his chin. He was a large, quiet man with a round face. His entire family, his siblings, his parents, and his grandfather Buell, had relocated to the village rather than letting him come alone.
"Well, they're the best," Nalam said, "and my mother is no exception. We men know a thing or two, though. Besides, since my mother was busy infiltrating the Tuathuan, my father had to take over the business."
"Oh, now that's just ridiculous," Canler said with a scowl. "Who would ever want to infiltrate a bunch of tinkers?"
"To learn their secret recipes," Nalam said.
"It's said that a tinker can cook a pot of stew so fine that it will make you leave house and home to travel with them."
"It's true, I've tasted it myself, and I had to be tied in a shed for 3 days before the effect wore off."
Canler sniffed. However, after a moment, the farmer added,
"So, did she find the recipe or not?"
Nalam launched into another story, Canler and Jonath listening intently. Imaran stood to the side, looking on with amusement. He was the other soldier in the group, bearing no pins. He was an older man, with thin hair and wrinkles at his eyes. His short white beard was trimmed to a point. The distinguished man was something of an enigma. He'd arrived with Loghain one day, and had said nothing of his past. He had a poised bearing and a delicate way of speaking. He was a nobleman, that was certain. But unlike most other noblemen in the Black Tower, Imaran made no attempt at asserting his presumed authority. Many noblemen took weeks to learn that once you joined the Black Tower, your outside rank was meaningless. That made them sullen and snappish. But Imaran had taken to life in the tower immediately. It took a nobleman with true dignity to follow the orders of a commoner half his age without complaint. Imaran took a sip of water from the serving boy, thanking the lad, then stepped up to Andral. He nodded toward Nalam, who was still talking to the others.
"That one has the heart of a gleeman,"
Andral grunted.
"Maybe he can use it to earn some extra coin. He still owes me a new pair of socks."
"And you, my friend, have the soul of a scribe," Imaran laughed.
You never forget a thing, do you?
Andral shrugged.
How did you know what a Ratashan Dazer was? I consider myself quite educated in these matters, yet I've heard not a word of it.
I had one once, Andral said. Drank it on a bet.
Yes, but where?
Ratash, of course.
But that's leagues offshore. In a cluster of islands not even the sea folk often visit.
Andral shrugged again. He glanced over at Taim's lackeys. A village boy had brought them a basket of food from Taim, though the Mahale claimed not to play favorites. If Andral asked, he'd find that a boy was supposed to have been sent with food for the others, too. But that lad would have become lost, or had forgotten, or made some other innocent mistake. Taim would have someone whipped, and nothing would change.
This division is troubling, my friend, Imaran said softly. How can we fight for the Lord Dragon if we cannot make peace among ourselves?
Andral shook his head. Imaran continued.
They say that no man favored of Loghain has had the dragon pin in weeks. There are many, like Nalam there, who should have had the sword pin long ago, but are denied repeatedly by the Mahale. A house whose members squabble for authority will never present a threat to other houses.
Wise words, Andral said. But what should we do? What can we do? Taim is Mahale, and Loghain hasn't returned yet.
Perhaps we could send someone for him, Imaran said. Or maybe you could calm the others. I fear that some of them are near to snapping. And if a fight breaks out, I have little doubt who would see the rough side of Taim's punishments.
Andral frowned. True, but why me? You're far better with words than I am, Imaran.
Imaran chuckled. Yes, but Loghain trusts you, Andral. The other men look to you.
They shouldn't, Andral thought.
I'll see what I can think of.
Nalam was winding up for another story, but before he could begin, Andral gestured to Jonath, holding up the arm guard.
I saw your old one had cracked. Try this.
Jonath's face brightened as he took the arm guard.
You're amazing, Andral. I didn't think anyone had noticed. It's a silly thing, I know, but...
His smile broadened, and he hurried to a nearby tree, beside which sat some of the men's equipment, including Jonath's bow. These Two Rivers men liked to have them handy. Jonath returned, stringing the bow. He put on the arm guard.
Fits like a dream,
he said, and Andral felt himself smiling. Small things. They could mean so much. Jonath took aim and launched an arrow, the shaft streaking into the air, bowspring snapping against the arm guard. The arrow soared far, striking a tree on a hill better than 200 paces away. Candler whistled.
Ain't ever seen anything like those bows of yours, Jonath. Never in my life.
They were fellow Andorans, though Candler had come from a town much closer to Camelon. Jonath looked at his shot critically, then drew again, fletching to cheek, and loosed. The shaft fell true and hit the very same tree. Andral would guess that the shafts were less than 2 handspans apart. Candler whistled again.
My father trained on one of those, Nalam noted. Learned the art from a Two Rivers man whom he rescued from drowning in Ilion. Has the bowstring as a memento.
Candler raised an eyebrow, but he seemed taken with the tale at the same time. Andral just chuckled, shaking his head.
Mind if I have a go, Jonath? I'm a pretty dead shot with a Tyran bow, and they're a little longer than most.
Surely,
the lanky man said, unstrapping the arm guard and handing over the bow. Andral donned the arm guard and lifted the bow. It was of black yew, and there wasn't as much spring to the string as he was used to. Jonath handed him an arrow, and Andral mimicked the man's pull, drawing to his cheek.
Light, he said at the weight of the pull. Those arms of yours are deceptively small, Jonath. How do you manage to aim? I can barely keep it steady.
Jonath laughed as Andral's arms trembled, and he finally loosed, unable to keep the bow drawn for a breath longer. The arrow hit the ground far off target. He handed the bow to Jonath.
That was fairly good, Andral, Jonath said. A lot of men can't even get the string back. Give me 10 years and I could have you shooting like one born in the Two Rivers.
I'll stick to short bows for now, Andral said. You'd never be able to shoot a monster like that from horseback.
I wouldn't need to, Jonath said. What if you were being chased?
If there were fewer than 5 of them, Jonath said, I'd take them all down with this before they got to me.
If there were more than 5, then what am I doing shooting at them? I should be running like the Dark One himself was after me.
The other men chuckled, though Andral caught Imaran eyeing him, probably wondering how Andral knew to shoot a bow from horseback. He was a keen one, that nobleman. Andral would have to watch himself.
And what is this?
A voice asked.
You do be trying to learn to shoot a bow, page boy? Is this so you can actually defend yourself?
Andral gritted his teeth, turning as Kateran sauntered up. He was a bulky man, his black oily hair kept long and loose. It hung around a blunt face with pudgy cheeks. His eyes were focused, dangerous. He smiled, the smile of a cat that had found a rodent to play with. Andral quietly undid the arm guard, handing it to Jonath. Kateran was full Ashaman, a personal friend of the Mahale. He outranked everyone here by a long stride.
The Mahale will hear of this, Kateran said. You do be ignoring your lessons. You have no need for arrows or bows, not when you can kill with the power.
We aren't ignoring anything, Nalam said stubbornly.
Quiet, lad, Andral said. Mind your tongue. Kateran laughed.
Listen to the page boy, you lot. The Mahale will hear of your impudence also.
He focused on Andral.
Seize the source.
Andral obliged reluctantly. The sweetness of Sayadine flowed into him, and he glanced nervously to the side. There was no sign of the shadows.
So pathetic, Kateran said. Destroy that stone over there.
It was far too large for him. But he'd dealt with bullies before, and Kateran was a bully of the most dangerous type, one with power and authority. The best thing to do was to mind. Embarrassment was a small punishment. That was something few bullies seemed to understand. Andral wove the requisite weave of fire and earth, striking at the large stone. The thin weave held almost all of the power he could manage, but it only flaked a few chips off the large stone. Kateran laughed heartily, as did the group of dedicated eating beneath the nearby tree.
Bloody ashes, but you're useless, Kateran said. Forget what I said earlier, page boy. You need that bow.
Andral released the one power. Kateran had had his laugh. He would be satisfied. Unfortunately, Andral felt men seize the source behind him. Jonath, Kanlar, and Nalam stepped up beside Andral, each of them filled with the one power and bristling with anger. The men who had been eating stood up, each holding the source as well. There were twice as many of them as there were of Andral's friends. Kateran smirked. Andral eyed Kanlar and the others.
Now, lads, he said, raising a hand. Ashaman Kateran was just doing what the Mahale ordered him. He's trying to make me mad, so I'll push myself.
The two groups hesitated. The intensity of their locked gazes rivaled that of the power within them. Then Jonath released the source. This caused Nalam to do likewise, and finally Gruff Kanlar turned away. Kateran laughed.
I don't like this, Kanlar muttered as the group of them walked off. He shot a glance over his shoulder. Don't like it at all. Why'd you stop us, Andral?
Because they'd have made rubble of us faster than you can curse, Kanlar, Andral snapped. Light man, I can barely channel worth a bean, and Imaran hasn't been here a month yet. Jonath's learning fast, but we all know he's never actually fought with the power before. And half of Kateran's men saw battle beneath the Lord Dragon. You really think you and Nalam could handle 10 men virtually on your own?
Kanlar continued to bristle, muttering but letting the argument drop.
Makashek na from a lashton morkes, Nelam mumbled. Delf tukak saki mir.
He laughed to himself, eyes wild. It wasn't a language Andral knew. It wasn't the old tongue, that was for certain. It probably wasn't even a language at all. None of the others said anything. Nelam occasionally cackled to himself in gibberish. If asked about it, he'd claim he'd spoken in plain, ordinary words. The outburst seemed to discomfit Imaran and Jonath a great deal. They hadn't ever seen friends go mad and kill those around them. Light send that they'd never have to see it now. Whatever else Andral thought of the Lord Dragon for leaving them alone, the cleansing earned Althor redemption. Channeling was safe now. Or at least it was safer. Channeling would never be safe, particularly now with Taim pushing them.
More and more people are taking those burning personal lessons from Taim, Nelam muttered as they walked to the shade of the trees. Nensen's success has the men eager. We've lost a good dozen to Taim's side in the last few weeks. Soon there won't be anyone left besides us here. I'm afraid to talk to half the men I used to trust.
Norli is trustworthy, Candler said. Evan Hardlin, too.
That's a small list, Nelam said. Too small. The Two Rivers men are with us, Jonath said, to a man. Still a small list, Nelam said, and not a full Ashaman among us.
They all looked to Andral. He glanced back at Taim's lackeys, laughing among themselves again.
What, Andral? Nelam asked. Not going to chastise us for talking like that?
Like what? Andral asked, looking back at them. Like it's us against them. I didn't want you lads to get yourselves killed or imprisoned, but that doesn't mean I don't see a problem.
He glanced back at them.
Aye, there's trouble here, brewing like a storm.
The men who take Taim's private lessons learn too quickly, Nelam said. Nensen was barely powerful enough to be considered for dedicated just a short time ago. Now he's full Ashaman. Something very strange is going on. And those Aes Sedai. Why did Taim agree to let them bond us? You know he's protected all of his favorites by stopping the Aes Sedai from choosing any man with the dragon pin. Burn me, I don't know what I'll do if one chooses me. I'm not going to be put on some Aes Sedai's string.
There were several mutters about that.
Taim's men spread rumors about the newcomers, Jonath said softly. They talk about the Lord Dragon, and how he drove good men to turn traitor. They say he's abandoned us, and that he's gone mad. The Mahale doesn't want those rumors pointing back to him, but burn me if he isn't the source of them all.
Maybe he's right, Candler said.
The others looked at him sharply, and the leathery man scowled.
I'm not saying that I'm going to go jump into Taim's camp. But the Lord Dragon? What has he done for us? Seems like he's forgotten about this place. Maybe he is mad.
He's not, Imaran said, shaking his head. I met him just before I came here.
The others looked at him, surprised.
He impressed me, Imaran said. Young, but with a powerful will. I trust him. Blight. I barely spoke with him a half dozen times, but I trust him.
The others slowly nodded.
Burn me, Candler said. I suppose that's good enough for me. But I wish he'd listen. I heard Loghain cursing that the Lord Dragon won't hear him when he gives warnings about Taim.
And if we gave him evidence? Jonath asked. What if we could find something that proves that Taim is up to no good?
Something is strange about Nensen, Nelam repeated. And that cash. Where did he even come from? And how did he grow so powerful so quickly? What if, when Loghain returned, we had information for him? Or if we could take it to the Lord Dragon directly?
The group turned to Andral. Why did they look to him, the weakest of them? All he could do was create gateways. That was where Kateran's nickname for Andral had come from. Page Boy. The only thing he was good for was delivering messages, taking people places. But the others looked to him. For one reason or another,
they looked to him.
All right, Andril said. Let's see what we can find. Bring Evan, Hardlin, and Norley into this, but don't tell anyone else. Not even the other Two Rivers lads. Don't rile Taim or his men. But if you do find something, bring it to me. And I'll see if I can find a way to contact Loghain, or at least find where he went.
Each man nodded, somber.
Light help us if we're wrong, Andril thought, looking back at Taim's favorites. And light help us more if we're right.